Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
I'm done lefting up the room.
You all situated in there now?
This whole room is set up for right-handed people. I should file some sort of a class action lawsuit.
There you go.
There must be somebody I can sue for this.
I can get in for half of it, right?
Yeah, you get in for half that price. Oh, it's okay. It's the burden that we bear, we southpaw left-handers. We've learned to live in your world.
Learned to live in ours.
In third grade?
Yes. What happened in third grade?
My grade school teacher. I guess I can mention her name. There's no possible way she could still be alive. To sue me.
You never know.
Yeah, she was about 100 years old then.
When you had her.
So if she's still alive, God bless her, because she must be about 150 years old now. Her name was Miss Rhenish. Very nice lady.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that she restrained my left hand behind my back.
What?
To force me to write with my right hand. And when I couldn't do it, I still can't do it. You know, if I try now, it looks kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So she, there were, I don't know, four or five other left-handed kids in the room. She made us all stay after school, like a special class, with our hands restrained behind our left hands, restrained behind our backs, and we had to practice writing and printing with our right hand.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't ever remember being told to try to write right-handed or being forced into anything like that. I just did it. Man, I've heard of things like that, though, where people were restrained. I had an uncle, I think, that said he was left-handed, and then they forced him to become right-handed. I mean, it was a real force and a challenge.
Yeah, I don't think you can. I mean, I guess you could learn, but it's isn't that amazing that it was considered so odd you had to? I must break this child of this.
This terrible affliction that they have.
It's like, okay, let's solve polio and left-handedness.
At the same time.
Yeah. It's roughly the same era.
That's about right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just weird. Wow. It's just weird.
No, I never was hassled by that. But, I do remember them commenting, oh, you're left-handed. And then that was pretty much the extent of it, really.
Yep. So... You know what else I do left-handed? Stop that. Archery.
Here we go.
Archery.
I was thinking about you when I was going through the produce section of the store this week.
Saw the apples?
Apples, yeah.
And trying to decide which one would look best on your head?
The biggest one possible.
What'd you decide?
I haven't decided.
Honeycrisps, I think.
Honeycrisps, that's my favorite one.
I ran into a large variety of them. At the, because I go to the Jewel on early Saturday morning, with tarp over my cart, as we all know, because it's nobody's damn business what I'm buying.
I've seen the surveillance video.
I also was looking at the apples, thinking, I got to get a nice size apple for our big show next week.
Should I consider this my last broadcast?
No. Shwani, why do you have no faith in me?
I think he's decided to paint a watermelon red.
To put on his head?
To put on his
head, Don't give the secret away. No, actually, it's a pumpkin.
This is going to be so great, and I don't want to, oversell it, but next Sunday, we're going to be broadcasting live from Tree Time, Christmas Creations in South Barrington. as we have been for many years now. We always have so much fun. Do you know what somebody emailed me and told me? That one of the other hosts on WGN was speculating that we were all drunk at tree time last year.
Really?
Because we had fun. We were laughing a lot, and we had a good, you know, fun show.
We always do there.
Yeah, but nobody drinks during our show.
Not at this hour.
Now at 1:05.
Look out.
That's a whole nother kettle of fish right there. So we're doing the show next week, and we've got musical guests. We've got lots of fun planned. But as we mentioned last week, I'm going to be shooting an apple off of Schwani's head with the bow and arrow live at Tree Time next week. I emphasize the word live.
Well, first of all, you have to put me in place here. You know, there's no rule that I'm going to actually be there yet.
What do you mean?
Well,
he's only scheduled to appear.
I'm scheduled to appear, yes.
Why wouldn't you?
Well, speculating that I'm going to be standing in front of a weapon, you don't do that voluntarily.
Ye of little faith. Little faith.
Have we decided blindfold or not?
That's entirely up to him.
Okay.
It's entirely up to him. But
you
I'm
want
set.
To look at an arrow coming at you?
Well, no. Personally, I would choose the blindfold.
I'm all set and ready to go. I don't know about all you guys. But yeah, we're set. That's going to be the highlight of the broadcast. We have many exciting things, but that's going to be the highlight of the broadcast. And everyone's invited to come out and join us to come and watch the show. This is, we set up chairs, and I have put in the request for more chairs because every year more and more people come to watch the broadcast, and they stay for the full 4 hours of the show, amazingly. They sit and they watch, and, I guess they're enjoying. So we should have plenty of chairs, but also this year you'll be able to watch my feat of archery as I shoot an apple off of Dave Schwann's head.
I have no idea how this is going to play out, but I will tell the audience the earlier arrival, the better, because I think we had pretty much a full house right at the start last year.
It was very busy.
Yeah.
It was very busy. So, we're going to need a little bit of room for the archery. Need a clear path to, where the arrow is going to be shot to the apple. So that, we're going to need a little space for that.
A little crowd control.
Crowd control. People stand back.
Everybody gets to stand back but me.
Not that I think anything's going to go wrong.
No.
But I think that the lawyers and the insurance people would prefer if we did not have the public.
I've already hired an attorney.
I've hired a medic.
And you've got the medic.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Well, we have things in place now.
You're both going to feel foolish when I hit that arrow right through the middle of the apple. You are both going to be apologizing to me for doubting me.
I will.
So that's next week, next Sunday morning. Mark the date down. November 11th, Tree Time Christmas Creations. In Lake Barrington.
David P. Schwann, August 22nd, 1956.
He was a nice man.
November 11th.
It's going to be a Schwanny ornament hanging on one of those trees.
So to speak. Okay, so that's coming up today. We've got my one-on-one interview with the Rami Malek and the guys that play the group Queen.
You like the movie.
I like the movie very much. Mm-hmm. Some people hate the movie.
I've heard
very
there
much.
Has been some up and down reviews on this.
Yes. Some people are loving it. I'm reading online a lot of people who really, really love this movie, as I do. And there are some people that hate the movie and can't stand it. And viva la difference, as I always say, there is no right or wrong review. There are just simply very many opinions. I did read one review this morning that said that the filmmaker should be murdered. I thought that was a little severe.
Whoa.
Yeah, I thought that was a little bit severe and just plainly nuts. But people have different opinions. I'll tell you mine, and I'll share the interview with Rami Malek, Mr. Robot himself, coming up a little bit later on the show. Larry Potash is going to be joining us from the WGN TV Morning News again this morning for his to tell us a little preview of his new show that is on Sunday nights on WGN. We've got lots of cool things today, theater and music and everything entertainment, as we like to say. 9:25 is the time. It's Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN.
If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
That was 10 years ago today. Barack Obama becomes the first African-American to become president of the United States. I know plenty of you do not like President Obama. Plenty of people do like Barack Obama. And it was a magical, historic night in Grant Park, just a block or two away from where I am sitting right now. But it was an historic moment in U.S. history, the first African-American elected president of the United States. And Shawnee, Barack Obama is back in Chicago today, right?
He is in Chicago this afternoon at a rally at the UIC Pavilion and also speaking in Gary, Indiana today. He's speaking for the U.S. Senate candidate there, Senator Donnelly, in Gary, Indiana, and then headed to Chicago this afternoon.
Remember that night, though, 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
10 years ago, he and Michelle and his two daughters all walk out on stage in Grant Park that was packed, you know, to his supporters. And it was quite a night. And it's been quite a 10 years, I might add.
very interesting 10 years.
What a very interesting 10 years it's been since then.
One of the things I remember about the evening and in the early morning, got done covering the election, I was in the loop area around between 2 and 3 a.m. And the early editions of the papers were out already, declaring Obama as the president-elect, but there was a real good feeling of enthusiasm there. You know, it was almost like a victory celebration for a sports team, you know, like when the Cubs won the World Series, sure, or the Bears won the Super Bowl, or the Bulls or the Blackhawks winning. That's what the atmosphere was like downtown. That's what I'll remember.
Yeah, it was. I know plenty of you are probably screaming at the radio right now and hate that we've even brought this up. Sorry, it's a part of American history that Barack Obama was, elected twice, was elected president of the United States. But that night in particular, the first African-American, what I remember on the news, I wasn't at the rally, I was watching it on TV at home. But what I remember most, when they would interview older African-American people, senior citizens, who never in a million years thought that they would see an African-American person become president of the United States, and how, you know, they were in tears. They were beside themselves with joy and happiness and pride. That's what I remember most about that night. Anywho, we've got another election to deal with right now. We'll talk a little bit more about that throughout the morning. Let's get an update on what's going on right now. Our news sponsored by FinalWishesChicago.org. Here's Dave Schwann. Tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, I will be talking with Jude Law. He stars as young Professor Dumbledore from the Harry Potter series in the new Fantastic Beasts 2. I was in Los Angeles yesterday, talked with the whole cast, including Eddie Redmayne. But tomorrow morning, all the new sports, weather, traffic, everything you need. But also, Jude Law talks about being young Dumbledore on the WGN-TV Morning News. 9:50, check your clocks. Should have turned them back. Don't believe me, just why. 9:50 is the time. Speaking of the WGN-TV Morning News, that is also where you see Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, Pat Tomasulo. Larry with his new show Backstory that's on Sunday nights at 8:30 on WGN-TV. And Larry joins us on the phone right now. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Always good to chat. How did happy with the show last week? I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you. I am happy with it. We put a lot of work into it, and I just like telling those stories, fleshing them out, bringing history to life, and we have another great bunch of stories this week.
I particularly enjoyed the story about the guy with all the weird stuff in his house.
I know, and the thing is, I didn't know he was going to have some of that stuff. Like, he had Nazi stuff, and he had the Ku Klux Klan outfit in his guest room, nonetheless, along with a real skeleton. And I suggested that maybe that was to discourage guests from staying too long.
Was it in an actual, like, a guest room somebody would sleep in?
Yeah. This guy lives on the lake in the North Shore. His parents were loaded, and he obviously spent his money on all this stuff because he was a big history guy. He had a electronic equipment from a Soviet spy. He had mummies. He had everything, and I didn't expect to see the Klan stuff. And it makes you wonder, you know, hey, you know, I appreciate history and everything, but I couldn't put this thing in my house. So I let people draw their own conclusions. I certainly asked him that question, and he just says, hey, that doesn't bother me. If people think I'm connected with that stuff, then that's their problem.
Yeah, I guess he's entitled to have whatever he wants, but that's creepy. All the Nazi stuff was creepy, but like shrunken heads and body parts, like
weird
mummified body parts.
Hey, everybody needs a hobby.
Hey, we can also make judgments about you coin collectors out there
right.
at the same time.
Right.
So what's coming up on the show tonight?
Great story. In fact, this first feature is going to be made into a TV series. I can't remember whether it was Netflix or whatever it was, but so here's the story. There's a millionaire in the western suburbs who had this weird estate. It was huge, and he was trying to solve the mysteries of the universe, things like levitation and immortality, and he thought there was this code in Shakespeare, so he hires all these crossword puzzle nerds to come in and try and solve this. They realize they have trouble cracking, or they don't have trouble cracking it. They realize it's probably there's nothing there. So they're about to quit when World War I breaks out, and the military comes to the rich guy and says, hey, we don't have any code breakers. Can we use your people? And he said, sure. So these people ended up creating the NSA and essentially the CIA. And it's hard to think that the United States of America did not have such a thing in World War I, but they didn't, because prior to that, all the codes were like, you know, on horseback and, you know, grabbing a secret document. And now you're dealing with radio waves. Well, you know, what do you do with that? So these people figured it out, and these were not mathematical geniuses. This woman was a school teacher in Indiana.
Wow.
And she and her husband essentially created the NSA.
Wow. That's so amazing. That's like that's a movie that Benedict Cumberbatch was in about the World War II code breakers. I can't remember the name of the movie now.
Yeah, well, this goes way back before that.
Before that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they are the pioneers of code breaking. There were no code breakers. These two people were like two of about like four or five people in the country who knew anything about breaking codes. Our other story was, I kind of stumbled upon these next two somewhat by accident. I was looking at museums in Illinois, and I see an Indian museum in Evanston, and I thought, I've never heard of it. And so we went there, and we found a piece of a collection of photographs of Native Americans from 100 years ago. And come to find out, it's an amazing treasure of photography, because without these, you'd probably have nothing. But we found out that this guy was like staging these Indian scenes because, you know, he wanted to portray what he thought Americans viewed Native Americans, you know, with the masks and the rituals. And so, and by this point, I guess they were a little bit beyond that. So he said, you know, I want you to do what you guys did like 100 years ago. So it's nice that we have photos of that, but he was criticized for staging some of these things and maybe ignoring some of the real problems that Native Americans have. So that was an interesting story. And our final story is a guy I used to play basketball with many, many years ago, is an amazing artist. He has made paintings for the Clintons, Oprah, and he kind of it kind of led me to a hidden symbol in the Statue of Liberty, which I have never known and never heard, and chances are you've never seen it. And you can't see it if you're going into the Statue of Liberty just because of the angle. And if you're in a helicopter, you can't see it because you're usually too far away. So we're going to reveal that hidden symbol tonight and show you how he is incorporating this into his artwork.
What's he saying, that the hidden symbol is what on the Statue of Liberty?
Well, you got to tune in to see.
Right. That tricky Larry Potash trying to get us to watch
a
show.
The artist who created the Statue of Liberty wanted this to be more prominent, and they got a lot of blowback. So he said,
really?
You know what? I'm going to include it, but I'm going to hide it.
Hide it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you'll see it tonight at 8:30 on WGN-TV. Backstory is the name of the show, Larry Potash. And, of course, tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. Larry, we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Dean, I appreciate it. Thanks, man.
All right, buddy. 956 WGN.
Bye-bye.
And don't forget that next week, our Sunday morning show will come to you live from Tree Time Christmas Creations. It's on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. We'll start at 9 a.m. We'll go till 1 p.m. Get there early because for some reason, people love to come and watch this show being broadcast live from Tree Time. It's our annual, it's become our holiday tradition, really, don't you think? I think so. We're going to have...
Swanee's being very quiet.
I'll take your word for it.
It's a holiday. Were we packed last year or not?
We were.
All right.
So, and remained so through the whole program.
So there you go. It's a holiday tradition. People love it.
But there weren't weapons involved last year.
Musical performances.
There are rumors of being used this coming.
We will have live musical performances. We'll have stuff to eat. We've got all kinds of food. Lou Malnati's is going to come out. We're going to have snacks and all kinds of things. Chance to win tickets to Paramount Theater's Wizard of Oz and a lot more, all inside this 50,000 square foot Christmas showroom. Plenty of space for pretty much anything that we need to do out there next week. Our fourth annual Tree Time holiday party with me, Dave Schwann, Andy Mazur. Elton Jim Toronto is going to be there. He always dresses up in his Santa Claus stuff for some reason. He'll be there.
Doctors and paramedics standing by.
Uh-huh. 22102 North Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. Go to WGNradio.com/events to get more information. Oh, yeah, and I'm going to be shooting an apple off Schwanee's head with the bow and arrow.
Trauma surgeons standing by.
Cleanup crew.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
This is the station where Steve Cochran celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20. On 720 WGN Chicago, smart speaker users say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Here is Dave Schwann. Dean Richards, Sunday morning. It is 10:17. Check your clocks. We fell back. Bohemian Rhapsody, by the way, the Freddie Mercury Queen biopic, number one movie of the weekend. $51 million. Interesting, the reaction on this movie. I loved it. I had nothing but a good time with this movie. Very nostalgic, very celebratory. Rami Malek's performance as Freddie Mercury, I think, is amazing. There are a few little things in this movie that, you know, were kind of formulaic. Nothing that killed the movie for me, though. I really enjoyed it. And most of all, I thought it was so accurate to the times of the 70s in so many ways. I'm going to talk more about that coming up later when we share with you my interviews with Rami Malek and the cast of Bohemian Rhapsody, number one movie in America. Some people not liking it, and we'll talk about that, maybe even take some phone calls on the whole thing later on. Want to get an update on the weather for today and for the coming week. Because meteorologist Mike Hamernick, it has turned wintry outside.
Yeah, it's cold and windy, and the steady rain has developed across most of the area in the last hour or two. And, boy, it looks like it's going to be with us all afternoon long. Kind of on washout today here in Chicago. At least we got the hot chocolate race in before the heavier rains settled in here in Chicago. But the runners fighting the wind. We've had a wind gust of 51 miles per hour out on the lake at the Harris Endeavor Crib, and a 40-mile-per-hour gust at Soldier Field. So the strongest winds are going to be along the lakefront because of their southeastern trajectory, and they're stirring up some 8 to 10-foot waves along the lakefront. So the lakeshore path there, especially outside of the breakwaters, may be a little bit dicey this afternoon. But, yeah, kind of a washout today, Dean. Cloudy. The temperatures aren't that bad. Temps are in the upper 40s and lower 50s. It's not going to feel that warm out there.
I think because it's of the wind, though, like you were saying.
It's, because of the wind and the rain, it's going to feel pretty miserable. But this is balmy compared to what's headed our way later this week.
Boy, uh-oh.
I wish I had better news.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's really going to turn cold around here. It's looking like almost an early December-like pattern settling in starting on Wednesday through next weekend and early next week. So get out the winter coat because it's really going to get chilly out here. Probably not going to make 40 degrees for maybe 3 or 4 days in a row later this week. It doesn't look like this will stick through December, but for a stretch here of about 4, 5, 6 days, it's really going to feel winter-like and will look winter-like too, perhaps at times with some snow.
Tell me about that. I've been hearing...
Yeah,
I've been hearing little sprinklings, if you will.
Yeah,
no pun intended, that we could see some this week.
Yeah, actually could see a sticking snow perhaps on Thursday night or early Friday. There's three storm systems this week we're dealing with. One today, one on Monday night and early Tuesday, and then a third one on Thursday night and Friday. That doesn't look real big, but it has a potential to produce a sticking snow around Chicago, perhaps the Midwest, a very early one. It's not a done deal yet, but one of our computer models strongly hinting at that for Thursday night and Friday. Not a lot of snow, but enough to maybe cover the ground. And then maybe some more flakes flying at times over the weekend. So it looks like it's going to be very winter-like for a 4, 5, 6 day stretch late this week and into the weekend. It does look like a major superstorm, Dean, but one of those that could deposit 1 or 2 inches of snow on the ground. And the period we're looking at right now would be Thursday night and Friday for that. And highs on, on Friday, about 36, and Friday 36 and Saturday 35. So those are our highs.
Wow.
And that would be by far and away the coldest weather of the season.
What is the normal high temperature for this time of year?
About 54. Today we should be up around 54, and we'll be close to that today. So today, number-wise, it's pretty close to normal, but of course it isn't going to feel like that because of the wind. So the calendar says November, but the weather maps are saying December for a little stretch here later on this week.
Wow. Okay.
And do have an update, too, for Election Day weather. That is looking better.
I'm about to ask you about that. Yeah.
That is looking better than it did 24 and 48 hours ago. There was computer models were really stirring up a pretty big storm for the Midwest on Tuesday, and it's really backed off that now. There's still a storm system there, and it's going to bring some rain mainly Monday night and early Tuesday now, but looks like the rain may move on out during the morning hours, and the afternoon looks dry, but still windy and chilly with temps in the 40s. Could even be some sun later in the day. So that's a huge improvement. A couple of days ago, it looked like a washout, a rain for most of the day on Tuesday. But now it looks like most of the rain will be Monday night and early on Tuesday. And then things start to dry out as we head into the mid to late morning hours with temps in the 40s. And still windy, but not as windy as what we're looking at today. So that's actually a big improvement from what we were looking at a couple of days ago.
Well, that's good because there sure seems to be a lot of interest in... Certainly in early voting, there have been record turnouts for early voting. I presume that might translate into something similar on Tuesday for the actual day voting as well. So anything that would make it a little easier for people to go to the polls, vis-a-vis no rain, snowstorms, anything that we might get.
And waiting outside, I mean, you think there's probably going to be some long lines at some of the polls, and that was my big concern is, people might get discouraged that because, if it's windy and raining, kind of a day like today, if that was happened on Tuesday, that, nobody wants to stand around in that, and
right.
You would have to be very courageous to wait it out, which I'm sure most people would, but it might discourage a few people. So it doesn't look that bad on Tuesday now anymore,
okay.
So that's good. That's probably the best news news I've got. Sorry.
Right.
And the fact that tomorrow looks dry,
yeah,
too.
You're nothing but bad news today, yeah, Mike. Well, I don't want to say anything, but
that time of the year, you know.
Are we seeing similar unseasonable weather elsewhere in the country right now? Is it just a system that happens to be headed our way?
Temps across the country are pretty normal right now, and including here in Chicago. But it is that it's this large chunk of cold air that's going to collapse over the central and part of the U.S. On Thursday and Friday. That's really going to deliver this cold punch of air. We're talking highs in the 30s and lows in the 20s, which is December-like level temperatures. But yeah, much of the central and eastern U.S. is going to be seeing this. The far south will probably miss out on the on that cold weather this coming week, but much of the eastern half of the country is going to be dealing with an early start to winter season here in Chicago.
I'm holding out as long as I can to get my winter coat out. I'm just light jacketing this morning, something I regretted. And also this morning I realized I'd better break the gloves out also, the gloves and the hat.
Yeah, I think it's going to be mandatory by the time we get into Thursday and Friday, because it'll be kind of a shock to the system, you know, 30s and 20s. It's we've been down there briefly, you know, for a couple hours in the early morning, but nothing like that steady all day long. So, make sure your heat's up and running, because an early start to this very chilly air this year here in Chicago. You know, I wish we could turn the clocks back. I wish we could turn the calendar back for about a month or two, back to some 50 and 60, 70-degree weather, but just not in the cards.
Well, you know what? You don't have to shovel chilly weather like this.
That's true.
That's really all I'm dreading. I don't mind the cold weather. We can bundle up and all that. But until there's actually some snow on the ground, I'm not going to complain too much about it.
Yeah, we're safe. There's three storms I mentioned this week, and we're safe in the first two, today and also tomorrow. There's no snow here for that, but it's that third one on Thursday and Friday that's the biggest concern. And if you're traveling north, there is snow up north. It's snowing heavily. I was looking at one of our cameras up in Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin, which is in the Northwoods in Wisconsin. It's snowing heavily up there. Just a week ago, the trees were beautiful. You know, there's still a lot of color, and the trees are bare now. It's snowing. It really,
wow.
Yeah, and there's a winter storm warning in effect for the North Shore of Minnesota.
Oh, my gosh.
Where they could see up to 6 inches of snow up in that direction. So if you're traveling north, you're going to run into some snow, but you have to go north of Wausau to Eau Claire line to get into that snow. And the further north you go, the thicker it's going to be, up to 2 to 6 inches of snow up in that direction.
It could, definitely have an effect on Wisconsin voting. You know, for our neighbors to the north, there could be some effect regarding the weather.
Could be.
And their polling results there.
Most of that snow will definitely be over with by the time the polls open on Tuesday, but most of that will be occurring today. But, nonetheless, tough sledding up north today,
right,
and tonight.
Take your sleigh dogs to the polls.
Yeah.
Mush! Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, thank you very much.
All right, Dean, anytime.
It's meteorologist Mike Hamernick with the latest from our WGN Weather Center. We're going to take a break. The Week in Theater is coming up. Theater critic Betty Moore joining us in just a bit on WGN. All right, still to come for you, my A-list interview with Rami Malek, the star of the new Queen movie, Bohemian Rhapsody, plays Freddie Mercury. Freddie and the other actors that play the members of Queen, plus the producer of the movie, Graham King. It's a really interesting insight into the making of this movie. That's coming up later on our A-list interview. And we'll talk more about this movie. I've been on our text line, I'm getting very positive reactions to the movie. 630 area code, love Bohemian Rhapsody. It was your A-list. I did give it a Dean's List A. I really loved it. Here's another 312 area code, went yesterday. Great movie. Another, I agree with you, really loved it. That said, some people are going to see the movie and not enjoying it. Something for everyone, I guess. There are no right or wrong reviews, simply, all different opinions. And we'll talk more about it, and I'll explain my review in a little more detail and how I disagree with some of the reviews that are ravaging the movie, one of them calling for the murder of the filmmakers, which is amazing. It's amazing to me. And in this world in which we live today, it's not amazing to me that somebody can't just disagree but want to murder the filmmaker for making a movie. So we'll get to all of that. All coming up after a check of our WGN News. Dave Schwann is here with the latest.
Another rope in another show.
8:39. Check your clocks. Fall back. It's time for the Week in Theater. What is going on stage in Chicago this week? That we welcome our pal, Patty Moore, theater and dance critic from Le Bon Travel
and Culture.
So infrequently that we have any culture on this program. So we're glad that you brought a little with you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Nice to have you here with us.
Good to be here, Dean.
Thanks for enduring the weather.
It's pretty bad out there.
Rainy, cold. It's the worst.
The wind is the worst.
Yeah, that's what that's.
Just slices right into you.
Just slices right through you. Well, you know, I hesitated inviting you to come on the show today because I was afraid you were going to yell at me.
For what? Because you didn't go to see La Boheme.
Because I never got to go see La Boheme like I told you I was going to do.
That's okay.
At the Lyric Opera. Not my fault. They went on strike.
I know.
I couldn't go to opening night. I was out of town. Yeah. And then I said, well, I'll catch up with it during the run. But then they went on strike, and I wasn't able to go.
You know, I hate to tell you this, Dean, because it's going to get you mad.
It's coming back.
They still have two extra performances that they added in January. So there's still time for people to go to see it.
I'm going to go try. I'm going to try.
Yeah, because that strike was really very scary, I thought. I mean, they were considering closing it. I can't imagine Chicago without a Lyric Opera. To me, if a city has an opera, it's civilized. If a city doesn't have an opera company, there's something wrong with it.
They were considering closing the opera permanently, you mean?
Well, I don't know if permanently, but they were considering closing the season, not going on. I mean, how can they go on without the musicians?
Of course. Yeah.
You know? And they have cut by about 2 weeks. The opera is coming very fast. In other words, one opera is opening this week, another one's opening another week. Last night, Siegfried just opened up. That's the Wagner piece. And for anybody who loves science fiction, that's a really, I mean, La Boheme is all about romance, passion, love. Mm-hmm. Siegfried is all about a guy who's looking for this ring so he can control the world. And there's a gold hoard, and there's dwarfs, and there's dragons.
Oh, look at that.
And there's gods. It's a lot of, it's kind of
it's
an
like Lord of the Rings.
Exactly.
Of.
Yeah. But hundreds of years ago. You know what? Maybe Tolkien was a fan of Wagner.
Maybe he got the inspiration from this piece.
Yeah.
And at the Lyric Opera, they have Il Trovatore?
Yeah, Il Trovatore is going to be opening soon. And Verdi is my absolute favorite. I mean, you cannot go wrong. If you don't even know what's going on, just close your eyes. The music is gorgeous.
What is Il Trovatore about?
Il Trovatore is actually it's about this man who's in love again, and it's tragedy and it's romance. Most of them are, and the only thing is Verdi. You know, Wagner was he thought he was going to be better than Verdi. He thought he was going to beat Verdi out. Wagner was a very egotistical man, and Wagner's music is great, but my own personal preference, I think Verdi is the best.
Wow, so there was competition between people producing music.
Yeah.
Not unlike what we see with some of the stars that are out today, you know, one trying to compete and top the other.
Things don't change, really. I mean, human nature stays the same. People are always fighting with each other like that, which I thought was hysterical. You said that somebody didn't like that movie, so they should kill
them. Yeah, murder the filmmakers.
I mean, you question the sanity of some of
these. Well, I mean, in the world that we live in now with the kind of reaction, it's not enough to just disagree with somebody now, which is, I think, is fine. You know, somebody has a disagreement, you talk about it, you think one way, I think another way, that's fine. But this confrontational and often violent reaction to somebody who has an opposing view is crazy prevalent right now.
You know, years ago I was invited to this party, and there was 25 other people, and all of us agreed on everything. It was the most boring party that I've ever been to. I mean, it is really fun to find somebody who has a difference of opinion. You could have a discussion.
Yeah.
But the world is becoming extremely, I mean, it's insane stuff.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a polite difference of opinion anymore. So, you know, somebody's got to be an idiot, and somebody's got to be a jerk, and I'm going to kill you, and you should murder the filmmaker. And, you know, there's like, you know, maybe some of it's just talk, but you don't know where that line is anymore. Because there are so many crazies in the world who are actually acting out on their insane rhetoric that
exactly.
they put on social media, which is the place for it right now, because there's no consequence for insane things that are said on social media or on the internet anymore. Anybody can say anything as outrageous as it is on the internet, and there's no consequence for something that's dangerous.
Yeah, I agree with you. The only thing is, you know what? Most theater critics, we disagree with each other all the time,
right.
and nobody comes to blows. It's wonderful.
Right. Yeah, if you have to get in a fist fight with you ever.
Well, you'd win.
But the day's young.
I mean, if you're good in archery, Dean, I wouldn't.
I don't know. I have a feeling that Betty could handle herself pretty well. I think mostly you and I generally seem to track along the same opinions on
you know what that
things.
Is because you're down to earth and you're not an affected person. You don't have to prove anything. You know who you are. You've got a lot of self-esteem, and we do. We agree on most things.
You know, even I don't know if all that's true, but thank you.
No.
But even with critics with which I disagree, some people we can have wonderful, friendly discussions about you think this and I think that. And there's never mean or, you know, semi-violence.
I've never had a fist fight with another theater critic.
Right. I mean, it's amazing. I think some people just go out of their way to be contrary, and some people go out of their way to be outlandish and inflammatory. I think that I think there's too much of that. Critical analysis, but in political analysis and a lot of what's going on, people put on a bigger show than they need to just because they want to stand out of the crowd sometimes.
I hope that's the reason for most of it, because I do think there's an element I don't want to know if I use the word insanity, but there's a word of mental instability.
Yeah.
I mean,
or
it doesn't
like a lack
make any
of civility or, yeah. or something. I'm not exactly sure how to say it, but anyway. So what do we what do you love right now?
Well,
there's
two shows that I think are really interesting. One is Gypsy, which is fabulous. It's
a Porchlight Theater.
Yeah, at the Porchlight Theater, they're doing such great work. And you know what's really wonderful about this? It's in a small venue. It's in the Ruth Page Center, which is a small, intimate venue, which adds to it. But here's something else. You know, they got Ife Butler playing Gypsy, which Ethel Merman made famous. She's inspired. She was made for this role. It's probably
Ife, you mean?
Yeah, Ife Butler.
No,
she's terrific.
She can belt it out.
Oh,
she's one of my favorite
me too.
Chicago performers.
Yeah, you know, it's a wonderful, I forgot how wonderful the music is. It's a terrific show. I think it's the best. You know, you've got all these very large venues in the city doing musicals. I think Gypsy right now is the best musical in the city. Christmas is coming, so there's going to be, I mean, they're not waiting until Thanksgiving. It's already opening in the middle of November.
Right.
But the other show that I really think is interesting, and I don't know if I'm going to say it's the best show or that I enjoyed it, but I found it kind of fascinating. Bruce Norris wrote it. The guy is kind of a little bit downbeat. It's Steppenwolf, so, you know, you kind of expect it. But here's the interesting thing. It's about these men that are living in a home, and they're sexual predators. Not just sexual predators of adults, of children. And they're limited by what they can do. They can't go anywhere. There's children. And here's the one of the characters shows up. Tim Hopper plays the character, and he was molested by one of these inmates in this home, played by Frances Geenan. What you have at the end of it is you're feeling sorry for these sexual predators,
wow.
and not even concerned with the fact that other children have been molested.
Wow.
And the reason for that is Hopper, who plays the molested kid, he's going back and he's screaming at Frances Geenan of all the things he did. Frances Geenan, the molester, is in a wheelchair. And Frances Geenan is a great actor, one of the great actors of the city. He's gentle and he's kind and he's thoughtful. It's impossible. And he's in a wheelchair.
Shows empathy for this
tremendous
horrific
empathy.
Horrific character.
Yeah. But on the other hand, Tim Hopper, who's playing the guy who has really good reason, is so harsh, is screaming. He tries to push Geenan off of the wheelchair. You end up disliking the character.
The victim. Yeah, wow.
And, he had, when Norris wrote this, he had to have this in mind. Now, one of the things about it, it's such a good show because it's very dramatic. You're sitting at the edge of your seat. You're involved with these characters. So you walk out thinking, this show you were never bored through it, which is one of the things that's kind of disturbing. He wrote a great dramatic show with these great actors, and you're starting to sympathize with the wrong people. So although the show is very good, I found it disturbing that it was that good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, isn't that, theater should move you that way a little bit. I think the best theater is the one that does disturb you a little bit, that leaves you thinking that,
yes,
you know, where your expectations may be one thing and it winds up being something else completely. I'm not sure I would, you know, say that I would love this kind of thing, but I love that it makes you think.
Oh,
I love that it turns your mind upside down a little bit.
A long time ago, Dean, when I first started doing reviews, I was invited. I went to see this small show. It was in a little dark little hole in the wall theater, and it was about 10 serial killers that were all explaining how they got to be serial killers. And one of the serial killers is standing right in front of me, and he's screaming, and he's spitting on me. And I was, by the time I finished, I walked out of there. I was shaking. I was so angry that these people, that these serial killers had killed all these people. And I'm walking to my car, and all of a sudden it dawned on me, if a show could bring me to that kind of an emotional pitch,
right,
it was a great show.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. This is called Downstate.
Yes.
That's at the Goodman Theater.
No, it's at Steppenwolf.
Oh, it's Steppenwolf.
Yeah.
Steppenwolf. It's called Downstate.
Yeah.
And
the other one is Gypsy at Porchlight, which is a Ruth Page.
A very different show.
Yeah, Yeah, it's totally different experiences.
Yeah. Did you see Hello, Dolly! That features Betty Buckley?
You know what?
In town right
now? I did see it. I was out of town. I'm so sorry. Okay. I missed it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think you would have enjoyed it.
I probably would have.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Maybe
I'll catch it.
Always enjoyed the show. Betty Buckley is so great.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like truly one of the great musical stage actresses of all time. We're very lucky to have her here in Chicago. And this restaging of Hello, Dolly! Has done so well.
I'll have to catch it, Dean.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy it. It's here till November 16th, I think.
Yeah, I'll catch
16th
it.
Or 17th, so there's a little bit of time still to catch it. Along the Gypsy mode, it's just a wonderful show that's really done nicely. Betty Moore's here from Le Bon Travel and Culture. We'll come back and talk about more of what's on stage the week in theater at 10:52. Check your clocks, WGN. On Tuesday, you have the power to influence the course of politics. Follow the most comprehensive local political news online at chicagotribune.com/midterms. Betty Moore is here from Le Bon Travel and Culture.com. She is a longtime Chicago theater and dance critic here in Chicago. And are you looking forward to all the holiday productions that we're going to have in Chicago, as I am, for the next month or so?
You know, to be honest.
That's what I love about Betty. She's always honest.
You know, there are so many shows opening up, and the problem is that they're the same shows. You've seen them over and over again. I mean, the first time I saw Christmas Carol, it was unbelievable. It's been like 25. I mean, when you see a show over and over again, and I have to remind myself as a critic, I try very hard when I see a show to pretend that I've never seen it before, to try to get that all out of my head so I can be honest about it.
I do the same. I have to work hard, especially with the Christmas shows.
Exactly.
To judge the show that I'm seeing on the stage and try to forget that I've seen it essentially the same thing 25 other times.
Exactly.
And judge what I'm seeing on the stage at that moment. My problem is that if you're doing, I mean, the Goodman has done it, but I think they're really in need of doing it again, where they've turned A Christmas Carol upside down and really reinvented it. It's been too long since they've done that. And I think I haven't seen this year's show, so maybe they're doing it this year. I don't know or not. But we've got the Joffrey Ballet and
the Nutcracker.
The new Nutcracker.
Yeah, they reinvented it.
They turned it upside down, and it's a little bit different now.
It is. But the thing is, in order for this to work, you must have to have, well, you've got new kids all the time that are going to see the show. Maybe it's new people coming in from out of town. But if you've been in the city for a long time, you're seeing the same shows over and over again.
Yeah, not everyone sees all the shows every single year.
That's true, like we do.
So I sort of get it. I do like the It's a Wonderful Life.
It's my favorite.
That are performed around the Chicago area. Mm-hmm. Those are coming out. What else do we have coming out? We've got the Nutcrackers.
You know, Miracle on 34th Street is opening a theater at the Center. That's another one that's opening up. trying to remember what the other ones are. There's just, you know, the only thing about Steppenwolf, which is very interesting, and I'm not surprised, they're the only theater that during Christmas time, they usually run a depressing show.
Their darkest, yeah.
The darkest thing they could find.
Right. I would almost be scared to see if they did a Christmas production at Steppenwolf.
Now, there's an idea.
It would be challenging.
You know what, Dean? Think about this, the actors. Larry Yondo, who plays Scrooge, right, who I think is one of the finest actors in the city. The guy is the most, if anyone's ever seen him, actually he's a Nell Gwynn right now at the Chicago Shakespeare.
Right.
If anyone's ever seen it, this guy is the most natural Shakespearean actor, the most natural anything. He's a great actor. And he's playing Scrooge, I don't know, 8, 9 years or something.
Right.
Imagine playing the same role for that long every single year. That, and we have to sort of, you know, get out of our, that pretend like we've never seen it before. Imagine what he has to go through to make it fresh.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting because he's on stage the whole time.
I can only imagine. You know, we've tried to interview him. Oh. We interviewed him a long time ago.
Really?
He doesn't like to be interviewed for some reason.
You know, I'm shocked about that. He's a very easygoing, talkative guy, actually. He's just, he's, you know, sometimes an actor can become too cerebral to be a good actor. The best actors that I find, there's an emotional core to them that just comes out almost like instinctive. He's one of those.
Yeah. Everyone's entitled, I guess. I guess there's no rule that requires that you have to be interviewed by us, but it would be nice. I think the audience would enjoy, you know, hearing from the guy who plays Scrooge. If people want to get more information on your reviews, see more about what you're seeing, what's the best way to do all?
Well, there's a couple ways. You can just go on Google and put Le Bon Travel and Culture, and the Le Bon is two different words, L-E-B-O-N. It means the good. That's okay. What it is in all French. Right. That probably is about the easiest way. Just put it in Google, okay. You'll find us.
Le Bon Travel and Culture, Betty Moore. Quick break, and then we'll update news next. Yes, it is the station where you can hear the top 5 at 5 from the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantes. Weekday afternoon, 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. And with the latest news sponsored by the Tortoise Supper Club, here's Dave Schwann. Sunday, you'll be able to watch Dave Schwann do the news live.
Is that before or after you shoot the apple off my head?
I shouldn't laugh about that. Sorry.
No, you shouldn't. I'm not laughing.
I know you're not. Sorry.
This is going to be the best remote broadcast we've ever done.
Who says?
It's next Sunday at Tree Time Christmas Creations, 22102 Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. The entire show will be broadcast again live next week. Dave will be there. Schwanny will be there doing the news. Andy will be there doing the sports. We've got live musical performances. We'll have food and fun. And as we've mentioned, as I learned a couple of weeks ago, apparently I have this natural talent for archery.
This innate ability.
Hidden skill.
Innate ability I never knew I had for archery. And I will be shooting an apple off of Dave Schwann's head. Live.
And here comes Schwanny's life insurance guy calling right now to update the policy.
Another robocall coming in for Schwanny. So we hope you can join us next week from 9 to 1. We should have a lot of fun for that. And then the week after that, I will not be shooting an arrow off of anybody's head when we go see The Wizard of Oz at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. That's going to be Sunday the 18th. 5:30 p.m. Plus, we're going to have a little pre-show reception for 10 lucky winners. They'll each win a pair of tickets. You could win a pair of those tickets by going to WGNradio.com/contest. We'll have a random drawing, but you have to get your name into the drawing if you want to be one of our winners. WGNradio.com/contest to join us at the Paramount to see their holiday production, Wizard of Oz.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
If you are of a certain age, you are undoubtedly singing along with Freddie Mercury and Queen for their classic Bohemian Rhapsody. It's also the name of the new movie that opened this week, which, by the way, is the number one movie of the weekend. Easy winner of the weekend. $50 million. Rami Malek starring as Freddie Mercury, and we'll get to my interview with Freddie and the cast in just a couple of minutes. I want to open up the phone lines, though, and get some of your comments. If you went to see this movie, what did you think of it? I am getting, overall, I'm getting an overwhelmingly positive reaction on the phone, and that may simply be that, you know, many of you are, you know, agreeing with my review on it and are chiming in. But when, you know, when I went online, I saw some of the reviews that trashed the movie, absolutely trashed the movie. And I read, you know, I read these reviews. And when you take apart the reviews, I think they're missing some really key things, or at least things that they don't mention in their reviews that, you know, makes me think that either one, they were too young and didn't understand the 70s and the 80s and that time. I read one review that said that the movie was homophobic, which puzzled me because Freddie Mercury dealt with issues of his own sexual orientation in this movie, and they are dealt with in a pretty forthright way, or at least they're dealt with the way that they were dealt with back in the 70s. You know, so I read a review of saying that the movie was homophobic. It didn't proudly deal with his being gay. Well, back then, you know, it was a different time. If you were a celebrity and you came out as gay, it was a career killer back then. It's not like it is now. And if you're younger, maybe you don't understand that. Maybe you do, and you still somehow think the movie is homophobic. I didn't think that it was. I think that it accurately portrayed the 70s, the rampant drug use, the rampant promiscuity sexually that was going on back then. That aspect of it all, I think they dealt with. Now, there are parts of this movie that are not, you know, not historically correct. I didn't go into this movie thinking that I was going to be seeing a documentary. You know, I know when I go to see a biopic that they've changed things. That happens all the time. I'm not shocked by that. Like, some people apparently are so shocked. It doesn't change things for me in enjoying this movie. What I enjoyed was this celebration of this band, the celebration of this music. I think that Rami Malek starring as Freddie Mercury was nothing short of spectacular. I would be completely shocked if he does not get an Academy Award nomination for this epic performance. There were a couple of things that were a little corny in the movie, the transitions that they had to make. But, you know, again, I don't go into a movie like this thinking that, you know, that I'm going to see every single aspect of their career being depicted up on the screen. I know that there are going to be some shortcuts. I know that there are going to be some things that make the movie more theatrical, that help to tell the story a little bit. So some of the, you know, the few minor things that I saw in this movie did not destroy this movie for me the way that it apparently did for some other people. I thought that it was, here's one of the things that I do when I go into seeing a movie. You know, did I get a couple of hours of enjoyment out of it? Did I feel fulfilled? Do I feel, when I'm reviewing a movie, do I feel like you are going to get your money's worth when you go to see this movie? And I think that the answer is overwhelmingly yes with this. I was singing along with the songs. I enjoyed it. I was smiling from ear to ear with some of the memories. I frankly was in tears at some time for the tragedy that Freddie Mercury's life turned out to be. I enjoyed it. So, you know, if, you know, a lot of people on our text line also enjoyed it. A lot of the reaction that I've gotten also enjoyed it. For those of you who thought that it, you know, quote, that it was garbage, for the one person who thought that the movie maker should be murdered, I think maybe that might be a little bit of extreme for simply disagreeing with you on that. For those of you who didn't like it, there are plenty of documentaries that you can watch, you know, if you're that much of a stickler for absolute precise details. Didn't bother me in a biopic, and frankly was not one bit surprised that they took some shortcuts and some liberties. Happens all the time. Not a shock. This is John, 312-981-7200. John, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Hey, Dean, good morning. I got to tell you, I was excited about this movie from the very first time I saw the first ad for it online, and couldn't wait for the actual show to open up. And when we went first thing Friday evening to go see it, and I will tell you, from beginning to end, it was extremely enjoyable. And the how the songs were created makes you endear yourself to those songs even more, I think. And the fact that they played the full version of every song,
right,
was even more enjoyable. And I will say the only thing that kind of drove me crazy was the mouthpiece that Rami Malek was wearing.
The teeth.
Because it was like, I kept looking every time. I'm like, oh my God, are those things going to pop out accidentally or something like that? But
go back and look at, you know, the real Freddie Mercury. His teeth were he had a set of choppers in his mouth.
Well, you know what? To tell you the truth, Saturday morning, I pulled up the Live Aid performance.
Oh yeah,
and except for the one Elvis song that they sang in the Live Aid performance in between before We Are the Champions, it was spot on. I mean, it was every move, the wardrobe, everything was spot on. Yeah. And it was extremely enjoyable. Yeah.
It really surprised me. A couple of the negative reviews that I read about this criticized the Live Aid scene in which they performed at Live Aid. I thought it was so great, and I thought it was just a crescendo of the movie. Historically, there may have been a couple of facts that were a little bit different that didn't make one bit of difference. It's just people nitpicking, and you know, if people want to do that, I guess, you know, they're entitled to do it. It didn't take away from my enjoyment at all. I thought that was the Live Aid scene, especially it's toward the end of the movie, is I think spectacular also.
Well, and my wife called me during the day, and she had read the other reviewer's review of it, and she said, "Oh my God, he gave it one star." I go, "He's smoking dope because Dean gave it four." Dean gave it an A, and I'll listen to Dean more than the other guy.
You know, everybody, you know, it's like, you know, you remember the great Roy Leonard, right?
Yeah, sure.
You know, he used to say that there's a reason Baskin-Robbins makes 31 flavors. There's something for everyone out there. So, you know, some people like it, some people don't. You know, I'm not saying my review is right and somebody else is wrong. My review is my opinion, you know, and I stand by it. And a lot of people seem to be coming out of this movie enjoying it, as you have, John. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. Roberta, you're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. I loved the movie. Loved it.
Loved it.
Loved every minute of it. Learned a lot more about the band. And it was so entertaining. And I liked it much better than A Star Is Born.
Oh, really? Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm
not sure I'm ready to commit to that, like, but what's that?
I said I didn't feel A Star Is Born. I didn't feel Lady Gaga's performance as much as I did in this one. This was really good. Right.
Yeah,
really enjoyable.
I loved Star Is Born, too, but
I know.
there is no question. I mean, there is certainly a nostalgic quality about Bohemian Rhapsody. That, you know, if you grew up in that era, I sat there going, oh, I forgot that song. I forgot they did that song. I forgot they did that song.
You know, I don't even think I realized they did some of those songs
right.
at the time.
I had a couple of people in the screening that I saw it with said the same thing. It's like, oh, I've been hearing that song at sports arenas all my life. I had no idea it was Queen. You know, they sing We Are the Champions or, you know, whatever. Younger people in their 20s and 30s that had no idea who Queen was or where some of these songs from where they came. But good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. What did you think about Rami Malek's performance?
Oh, I thought he was great. I really did. I enjoyed it. He seemed believable to me. You know, I don't know. Just seemed believable.
He sure seemed to just live and breathe that, you know, characterization. I mean, instantly you forgot that you were looking at Rami Malek, and you thought you were, you know, looking at Freddie Mercury. I mean, that's how much, to me, he inhabited the character. So,
well, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Well, I'm glad that you called, and we're going to hear my interviews with Rami and the cast coming up in the next half hour. You have a great day today, Roberta, okay?
Thanks, you too.
Thanks a lot. Love that. 630 area code. Dean, OMG, Bohemian Rhapsody is amazing. Totally captures the times. I think that's a key that a lot of reviewers are missing with this, that it completely captures the 70s the 80s. Here's one that says, from 815, I wish they would have morphed into real footage of the Live Aid concert through the credits. I thought they did. I seem to remember that they did show real footage of the Live Aid concert at the end of the movie. Here's a 708 area code. Saw it in Orland last night. Absolutely loved it. It's the first concert that we saw in 1976. We think the casting was perfect. Five-star show. So people seem to be enjoying it. But that said, you know, everyone's certainly entitled to their opinion. Quick break. We update news. And then my interview with the man who plays Freddie Mercury in the movie, Rami Malek, is next on WGN. Great Roy Hargrove. Sad news for jazz fans. Shawnee has been reporting through the morning. She's so young, right, Shawnee?
49.
49 yes. years old. One of the great jazz trumpeters of all time.
He was a protege of Wynton Marsalis and quickly became very popular because he was very, very good in his early 20s. He was actually born in Waco, Texas, and played Chicago regularly here. He liked the city, as I mentioned, a frequent player at the Jazz Showcase. And for a long time, every New Year's Eve, he was the featured performer there. He always played here between Christmas and New Year's in Chicago and playing at the Jazz Festival.
Yeah, but that's where I saw him at Jazz Fest.
Right, right.
And I think I also saw him at the Jazz Showcase. I know that he was there quite a bit, but I definitely saw him at Jazz Showcase. You know what I love? You know, young guys like him that were so into the really traditional forms of jazz. Didn't try to change it. Jazz itself is improvisational, but really respected the masters and respected the roots from which this music come.
Well, that was, one of the reasons why is because people like Roy Hargrove and Russell Gunn and other trumpeters were following kind of a lead of Wynton Marsalis, who steered jazz
another
into
young
that
guy
mainstream direction.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, they kind of, and I don't want to really say follow their lead because they were, you know, great players in their own right. But if you remember in the late 80s and early 90s, Wynton was taking the music back to a more mainstream, more instrumental focus for the music. And Roy was one of them.
I think like a return, you know, a reminder to younger generations to respect the masters.
Yeah.
Respect what came before us. I think that's what Wynton and Branford Marsalis also, who's just in Chicago the other night, by the way, for Friday night.
Right.
I think that's what they brought. But very sad when somebody that young dies. But truly one of the great jazz players of all time, Roy Hargrove. Rest in peace to him. Buddy, you're an old man, poor man, pleading with your eyes. Somebody better put your bag into your place. We will rock you. Another musical great, Freddie Mercury, no question about it. His vocal range was amazing. His onstage persona, amazing. Died way too young. Complications of AIDS back in the early 80s when being diagnosed HIV positive was a death sentence then. Now it's controllable like diabetes is. Very, very different, but this new movie that's just come out, Bohemian Rhapsody, that opened with $50 million, is the number one movie in America this morning, is generally getting very positive reviews. Not everyone agrees, but generally is getting very positive reviews. We talked a little about it in the previous half hour, but I wanted to share with you my conversations that I had a couple of weeks ago in London with the stars of this movie, most notably Rami Malek, who you may know from the television series Mr. Robot. Rami is a very, very talented actor, actor by trade. He doesn't do all of the singing in this movie. His vocals are enhanced with actual Freddie Mercury vocals and also another singer whose name, unfortunately, is escaping me now, but I'll look it up, who is a Freddie Mercury sound-alike. So it's the melding of all three of their voices that create the vocals that you hear in this motion picture. It's the physical transformation, though, and the movements, the subtlety of the movements that really struck me with Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury.
We all had a pretty drastic transformation in this film. And what was helpful, I think, was knowing we had to emulate them step for step, move for move in the Live Aid sequence at the end. So we got our physicality thrown in there quite quickly. We had a movement teacher named Polly Bennett who helped all of us immensely throughout. But there was so much time, I think, collectively watching all the archival footage and picking things up left and right that we just kept in our back pocket.
Yeah. Do you, Rami, in particular, did you study his movement, his speech patterns? Because it's uncanny. I was a music DJ then.
Yeah.
And played all of his hits and remember the nothing more than 3 minute rule that they had back then. I was also, you know, sort of, you know, in the forefront of the AIDS crisis, the darkest days of the AIDS crisis. And this movie is so celebratory, nostalgic, and tragically nostalgic for me in so many ways. But, I mean, you must have had to capture all those nuances to make it so perfect.
Well, I really appreciate the way you articulated that, because the film is all of those things. To be quite honest, I fell in love with him. And I think when you fall in love with someone, you just start taking those things on. Somehow, it's almost by osmosis. They seep into you. And he is becomes quite a hero of mine now, even more so now than once I filmed.
Yeah. Guys, do you think so also? I mean, I think this why this movie works so well, it's not just about Freddie and it's not just about the nostalgia, but it's about so much more. It's all good movies have to be. It has to be about so much more. The relationships, the you know, being family and not being family, and acceptance and non-acceptance, don't you think? I'm just going down the line. And
yeah, I think it's about belonging. It's about finding your people, I think. And they found it amongst themselves, the four of them, as a band. But I think also that's what they give to their audience, is that sense of belonging, that sense of having a place and being able to celebrate who you are as an individual.
Yeah, I'll just go down the line to Ben.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I've got everybody right.
That's all right.
The same?
Sure, yeah. I think family is definitely an important theme within this movie, you know, seeing what it takes for a band to have been so successful and make such great music for such a long period of time and still kind of stay together throughout the many fights, the many squabbles, the many, you know, all of that stuff. So I think it's definitely important. And, you know, the audience becomes Queen's extended family, you know, like Freddie was including everyone in the auditorium. So, yeah, I think family's definitely an important theme in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you see in the Another One Bites the Dust sequence how that scene sort of starts with them fighting and almost coming to blows, and then a cool riff or something musical sort of stops them and brings them back together. And you sort of see how, like, they always would come back to that. They would always remember that there was something bigger, right? That any of the little squabbles, they'll fall out, they'll not want to see each other for a little while, but they'll get over it. And because they know that what they had was so special together that they never wanted to give that up.
Yeah, that is Joe Mazzello, also Ben Hardy, Gwillem Lee, Rami Malek playing Freddie Mercury, Queen from Bohemian Rhapsody. In a minute, the producer of the movie, Graham King, who's brought us amazing movies like Gangs of New York and Departed and so many other classics, who is the producer of this film, talks about the very difficult making of this movie next on WGS.
On.
7:55, my Dean's List A-List interviews with the stars and now the producer of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. Graham King has brought us some of the biggest, most iconic movies of all time and has worked with some of the biggest stars. Now he brings us this story, which was not an easy movie to make. Originally, Sacha Baron Cohen was attached to the movie. He was going to play Freddie Mercury, and there were creative differences as they were described. Rami Malek took over the role, but when we sat down in London a couple of weeks ago to talk about it, Graham King explained more details.
You know, to me, there was a lot of talk about the film being made. We knew we were under the spotlight because every time something went out about this film, it was either negative press about this or this one saying that. And I just kept quiet throughout the whole process. And for me, it was about getting the screenplay right. It was about getting his and the band's story right. And when you have life stories, you've got their whole lifespan. And then you've got to narrow it down to a theatrical experience and a 2 hour and 2 hour and 15 minute film. Tough to take on, but I love those challenges. And there were times where I thought the script was right years ago, and we would say, let's move towards making the film. Let's look to see who's going to play Freddie. Now, then I'd wake up and go, you know, I just read it again. It's not right yet. And we can't do this. You get one shot at this.
Yeah. I think that's the real power of the movie. It's Freddie's story. It's the nostalgia of the music, both highs and lows with the darkest days of the AIDS crisis. But ultimately, it's really beautiful stories of friendship and unconditional love and things that anybody can relate to, whether you've ever heard of Queen or not. And I guess that speaks to what you're saying about getting the story right.
Well, yeah, and part of the reason I wanted to make this film is I felt there was so much within his life and the band's life that becomes so relatable. An immigrant outsider, a kid that was bullied and had to learn to box to protect himself because of the way he looked. And the underdogs. And I felt those three messages there, if a modern audience could relate to.
Yeah. Producer Graham King will put the full interview up at WGNradio.com. I gave Bohemian Rhapsody a Dean's List A. I really liked it. I'm encouraging you to see it on as big a screen as possible. Somebody had texted in that they saw it on an IMAX screen, and especially the final scene, the recreation of the Live Aid concert, is spectacular up on a big screen. We will take a quick break. Schwani updates the news next. WGN. All right, coming up on our Food Time show, a wrap of the very, very nice foodie store, I guess you might say, Sur La Table, will join us, talk about getting ready for Thanksgiving. Can you believe we're like 3 weeks away from Thanksgiving already? That seems unbelievable to me. But yes, we are, and yes, we are going to talk about getting your home set for Thanksgiving dinner. That's all coming up here where Steve Cochran celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20. We call it 7:20 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users say play WGN radio on TuneIn. With the latest now, here is Dave Schwann. Let's see what I just learned on my phone.
What did you learn on your phone?
Siri, how do I vote? Siri's checking.
This is voter apathy on the part of Siri.
I found this.
Siri is so stupid.
What is this?
I hate Siri so much. Siri, how should I vote?
Okay, I found this on the web for how should I vote.
Okay, now it brings up some websites. Voting guides for elections. Decide who to vote for, isidewith.com, different sites to help you, in the election process. So you can just go on your phone, and unless your Siri is a moron like mine is, Siri doesn't, I think I speak fairly clearly. Siri seems to have problems understanding me. Silly. Early voting, Schwani's going until 4 p.m. tomorrow?
Four today, and also tomorrow. And that's at the Supersite downtown on Washington, also in various polling places.
In various neighborhoods.
Yeah. And, you know, we talk about getting out the vote and people voting. It was encouraging to hear that early voting was up by something like 60-plus percent for this election.
I love that.
800,000 people around Illinois have cast their vote early. Yeah, you and I, we've talked about this. We're a little old-fashioned. We want to go to the polls and do it on election day.
Yep.
But if you can vote and vote early for whatever reason, do it.
Yeah, I mean, I have voted early if I've been out of town, if for some reason. Otherwise, I just like the process of going on election day.
Yeah.
And almost always in my precinct, they have sweet rolls at the polling place.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, if you vote early, you know, you miss out on the sweet rolls.
No, yeah, there's an incentive to go. Free food, right?
I've said that, if you want to get, even still with early voting and registration at an all-time high, they're still expecting only 50% of
the registered voters.
Yeah, which to me is still pathetic. It's better than 20%.
Yeah, that's just half.
Better
that's
than it's
not
been.
A majority.
Everybody should vote. Everybody should vote. Should be mandatory. But I was telling somebody that I thought, if they gave away like free six packs of beer, then you'd get. Then you wouldn't have any problem.
But then you'd have the early and often problem.
Right. Right, yeah. Did I vote already? Hey, did I vote already? I can't remember. Can I get another one of those six packs of beer?
That was fun.
You're a pretty election judge.
Or you get the beer snob going in. No, that's not my kind of beer.
That's
no,
domestic.
No, I'm sorry. I only want craft beer. No.
That's all you have?
That's how you get people to come in to vote.
You don't have any wheat beer.
Polling places at a liquor store.
It's would be different.
Uh-huh.
Newspapers have done their recommendations, their endorsements. If people even, go with that, do you think, is that a factor? Do people see the newspaper endorsements and go with that? Do people, especially celebrity endorsements, I mean, that's been a topic of conversation forever. If, if you're an Oprah Winfrey fan, say, for example, she's been out stumping in Georgia.
For the Georgia gubernatorial candidate.
Right. Does that make a difference? I don't know. I don't know if it does or not. And people do respect Oprah. So, that may make a difference. I don't know if it does or not. There is one site that I want to bring to your attention, because in addition to all the big races that we're seeing on TV with and hearing on the radio with the nonstop commercials, we have quite a few judicial positions also that will be filled with this election. And a lot of people just blow right past the judicial ballot because there's a lot of names on it. And also you figure, I don't really know all the names on here. I'm not really sure who to vote for. There's a site that's called voteforjudges.org. It's nonpartisan. And what it does is it shows you the recommendations of different bar associations. In other words, there are recommendations by the Chicago Council of Lawyers. There's recommendations for the Cook County Bar Association, for the Asian American Bar Association, for the Black Women's Lawyers Association, Hellenic Bar Association, Hispanic Lawyers, the Lesbian and Gay Bar Association, the Puerto Rican Bar Association, the Women's Bar Association. There are many different bar associations. These are the lawyers who actually go in front of these judges that actually have some knowledge of who they feel are qualified to sit on the bench and who are not qualified to sit on the bench. And you can actually, look at any one of the recommendation lists. If you feel like, I'm Hispanic, so, I'm going to look at the Hispanic Lawyers Association list and see what they think. Their beliefs are probably close to my beliefs, or Women's Bar Association. Maybe, you want to look at that, or, whichever of the bar associations, you can look at their recommendations and make an educated vote vis-a-vis the recommendations of these lawyers who actually go before these judges. I've been using this for quite a long time. And again, it's voteforjudges.org. So one more way that you can, do your part in this election, make a, an informed decision on, what's in the ballots. So let me take a quick break and we'll come back. We've got our food show coming up in a few minutes. The folks from Sur La Table, the kitchen and cooking store, are going to be joining us with some ideas to get you ready for Thanksgiving. Next on WGN, tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News, I will be talking one-on-one with Jude Law. He stars in the Harry Potter prequel, Fantastic Beasts 2, Crimes of Grindelwald, which I saw in Los Angeles over the last couple of days. I'll be telling you more about that as we get closer to its opening day. But we talked with Eddie Redmayne and the whole cast. And I think very significantly, Jude Law, who plays young Professor Dumbledore that we know from the Harry Potter movies and the Harry Potter books. Everyone has been wondering what young Dumbledore would look like. I'll tell you when we get a little bit closer to the opening of the movie, but Jude Law talks about taking on this iconic role tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News. All of that plus all of the pre-election news that there is to know. And then on Tuesday night on WGN-TV starting at 7 o'clock, you can watch your vote count, the most complete local election coverage decision 2018, the races, the results, and the reaction, all on Chicago's very own WGN-TV. So last night, I don't know how many of you stayed up late for Saturday Night Live. A couple of things happened in the opening of the show. Kate McKinnon did a spoof and actually took a little shot at Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin's been in the news the past couple of days for allegedly punching a guy on the streets of New York. Allegedly, the charge, he was arrested. The charge was assault. And the story was that he allegedly hit a guy for taking a parking space on the street, something that Alec Baldwin has categorically denied. Yesterday, Alec Baldwin sent out a couple of tweets, and the first one said, "The assertion that I punched anyone over a parking spot is false. I want to go on record for that." And then he sent out a second tweet later that said it's become sport to tag people with as many negative charges and defaming allegations as possible for the purposes of clickbait entertainment. Clickbait entertainment, meaning stories about celebrities that would garner clicks on the internet. And Alec Baldwin, you know, sort of has a reputation of, wow, well, you know, what has he done now? So Alec Baldwin says that he didn't do it. The guy says that he did. We'll see where all that goes. But I thought it was very interesting last night that on SNL, where it's Alec Baldwin who is usually poking fun at somebody else, and usually Donald Trump, last night SNL was poking fun at Alec Baldwin for his alleged lack of temper, his quick temper, and these kinds of stories. The other big story that came out of SNL last night was the Pete Davidson, Ariana Grande story. Earlier in the week, NBC was running these little promotional announcements that featured Jonah Hill, who was the host last night, and a singer, forgetting her name right now. I want to say Maggie Rogers. I might be wrong about that. And Pete Davidson. And Jonah Hill would say, you know, join me, looking forward to seeing you on Saturday night. And then at one point, Pete Davidson looks over at the singer and says, hi, I'm Pete. Do you want to get married? And, you know, she says no. And Pete goes, I lost out again, something like that. And Ariana Grande took offense to that, obviously making fun of their engagement that broke up a week or so ago. But last night, both Pete Davidson and Ariana Grande both had each other on their minds. Pete Davidson did a little segment on Weekend Update on SNL last night and spoke seriously, and it sounded like kind of from the heart, about his breakup with Ariana Grande. Let's take a listen to this.
I look like a Dr. Seuss character went to prison. The last thing I will say is I know some of you are curious about the breakup, but the truth is it's nobody's business, and sometimes things just don't work out, and that's okay. She's a wonderful, strong person, and I genuinely wish her all the happiness in the world. Now, please go vote on Tuesday. All right?
Well, there you go. Pete Davidson is talking seriously and I think kind of sweetly about engagement to Ariana Grande. But an hour before SNL went on the air last night, Ariana dropped a new song, released a new song that's called Thank You, Next. Thank You, Next, in which she mentions Pete Davidson in the song. She actually mentions her previous boyfriend as well, Mac Miller, in the song as well. Mac Miller, who died of a drug overdose. But of Pete Davidson, she says, even almost got married, and for Pete, I'm so thankful. So both of them seeming to be a little bit reconciliatory to one another. A little bit of the showbiz news for you here today. It is 12:25. Check your clocks. Fall back. We'll be back with more and our Food Time show next on WGN. Getting you ready for Thanksgiving. Believe it or not, it's just a few weeks away. That'll be the subject of our Food Time show that comes up after a check of WGN News. Let's get the latest. Schwani, are you set?
I am set.
Are you ready to go?
I am ready.
Are you ready for next week is the big question.
That's another question.
Are you ready for the big show next week?
What was that?
Excuse me. Well, that's interesting. We have no idea why that's happening. Don't make me punch you.
After 35 years, next week you're just going to take a shot at me. No pun intended.
What was that? Do we know why that's doing that?
I have no idea.
Jeez. Unbelievable. So next week we're going to it'll be another technical wonderland when we take our show out to Tree Time Christmas Creations in Lake Barrington. It's 22102 North Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. We'll be out there doing the show live, having a lot of fun. Live musical performances. We will have free tickets to different shows to give away. It's going to be loads and loads of fun. Our fourth annual Tree Time Holiday Party, the highlight of which will be my archery demonstration that I'll be putting on.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that right now.
In which I will shoot an apple off of Dave Schwann's head. Don't miss it is all I can say.
No, don't you miss. That's the key. That's the statement there. You miss.
It's next Sunday from 9 a.m. till 1 p.m. We're looking forward to that. And now,
if you miss, I'll never speak to you again.
That's very true. Now the latest, here's Dave Schwann.
Hey, good looking. Well, what you got cooking? How's about cooking something of me?
Eat it.
Welcome in once again to our Food Time program, Chicago Radio's original cooking and dining show, the award-winning All Things Edible program, heard every Sunday at this time, and I cannot believe that we're just weeks away from Thanksgiving Day, and that means food, food, and more food. It's the foodiest time of year. Are you ready for it is the big question. Now, some of you, think you may have everything you need in your house to host the family and your friends for the holidays, but there are always some great new ideas, and for that, we bring in Amy Lukasik, who is the resident chef with Sur La Table, all things food, all things kitchenware, out in Old Orchard. Amy, welcome. Nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. That's a good description, right, of Sur La Table?
Absolutely.
It's like the all thing, if you're a foodie,
it's
heaven.
Heaven, yes, absolutely.
With all the different kitchen things that you sell.
Yes.
And things that you do. And specifically, I wanted to talk about Thanksgiving today, because there are always new gadgets and appliances and things that you can add to make Thanksgiving go a little easier. What's new and on the horizon for this year for Thanksgiving?
So definitely, I think that one of kind of the big things that we're seeing is, in addition to having your typical gas range and oven, a lot of people are gravitating towards having countertop ovens. Something where if the turkey's taking all of the time in the oven and you have other things that you need to prepare, a countertop oven, Breville makes.
You mean like a toaster oven?
It's a little bit bigger, so you can put full-size sheet trays in there.
Oh, wow.
And it's great because, you know, it's electric, but it also has convection settings, broiler settings, and things like that. So it's really versatile.
Yeah.
And so you're almost kind of giving yourself that double oven feel without having a double oven.
Now, you know, I just went back to a toaster oven. I had one for years, and then I stopped using it. I don't know why. I just stopped using it.
Yeah.
And this is like maybe 25 years ago.
Sure.
And then when I want to warm something up or bake something quickly, I would have to crank up the whole big oven. It took forever.
Yes.
I felt like it wasn't a very good use of energy also, mine and the ovens. So I just bought myself a nice little toaster oven.
Yeah.
And I use it all the time now.
Yeah.
As an oven, I use it to reheat. I ironically also use it for toast,
right?
You know, and things like that. But I'm amazed at how these have changed.
Absolutely.
And how versatile they are now.
Yeah, so I've found that a lot of our customers that come in, they're opting for these countertop ovens.
Yeah.
And, you know, even for those who have a small family, or maybe it's just one or two of you, you know, like you said, turning on the oven, preheating it, and doing all of that, the countertop ovens, they heat up quickly, and you know they're easy to clean, and it's just, you know, it's easy peasy.
Now, how do you know which ones to pick, though? Because there is a tremendous price range of these toaster ovens.
There is. So, you know, one of the things that you want to, you know, kind of just keep in mind is obviously your countertop space.
Right.
So they do make, a couple of different sizes, and they also offer a bunch of different settings. So if you're looking for something just kind of, can get the job done. You know, you don't need to have the convection setting and the broiler setting. You know, you can look at something for $150 to $199, and then you can get the, you know, Rolls Royce of countertop appliances. You know, Breville has a fantastic...
Breville is the Rolls Royce?
For the countertop ovens that we sell,
Wow.
It's top of the line.
I didn't know. I wound up buying the Rolls Royce oven because I really do like it.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And, you know, they have LED settings on there, and it's really user-friendly.
Right.
And, you know, those can be a little bit on the higher end side, so you know, maybe $350 up to $400.
Yeah, I didn't spend that much for mine, but I do like it a lot.
Yeah.
In terms of countertop cooking, though, these Instapot things.
Oh my goodness!
Is that still all the rage?
It is still all the rage, and you know, honestly, you know, the Instapot has definitely made a name for itself. They have a huge following. And I get, you know, that's probably one of the top questions that I get asked, you know, during classes. Do you own an Instapot? Do you use it? And an Instapot is great. Actually, let's kind of talk about what the Instapot is and what it does. So it's a multi-cooker. So instead of, you know, having a slow cooker, a rice cooker, pressure cooker, you know, taking up space on your shelves, this is a multi-cooker. It's all in one. So these multi-cookers have really kind of taken place of all of those appliances. And it's great, you know, if you don't have a ton of, you know, if you don't have a ton of countertop space or storage.
Place to store all of the other appliances.
Exactly. And so I get asked all the time, I do own one, you know, but when they say, you know, is an Instapot for me? Should I try it? I always say try it. And actually the great thing about Sur La Table is we have cooking classes at certain locations.
Yeah.
And we actually offer Instapot classes. So you can see even just how to put the top on. Sometimes even that is,
tricky.
It could be tricky.
Yeah.
So we go over what it does, and then we actually make three different dishes.
Well, what would be some Thanksgiving things that I could do in my Instapot? What would be traditional Thanksgiving things?
So the first thing that comes to my head is making turkey stock for your gravy in your Instapot. So you can throw your, you know, turkey bones or wings, some aromatics, and have turkey stock in 2 hours instead of having it on the stove for 10 hours.
Right.
Okay. You know, I'm that one, that person that would make the turkey stock, not go to bed until way late because my stock is on the stove. But, you know, now you can just knock it in the Instapot and have it done in 2 hours.
And get it done ahead of time.
Ahead of time.
Also,
and,
so
you know,
you just need to warm it up later.
Exactly. You know, and then you're not, you know, slaving over a stove. It's not taking up space on your your range if you have other things to do.
What about mashed potatoes? Can you do that in an Instapot?
Absolutely. I mean, you can cook the, you can definitely pressure cook your potatoes, and it would be done in, you know, by the time it cooks in the pressure cooker, maybe we're talking maybe 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and your potatoes are done and ready to be mashed.
And that really also is something that you can do ahead of time, right?
Absolutely.
The potatoes certainly, and then finish them up on day of. But I think,
exactly.
I think you can do them ahead of time.
I always do mine. That's actually the first thing that I do Thanksgiving morning is I knock out my mashed potatoes and just put them in a vessel where I can warm them, you know, when the turkey's ready to be done.
And that's where your old-fashioned crock pot, as we used to call them,
yes.
Your slow cooker, just a regular old slow cooker, if you put the mashed potatoes in there on low with maybe a little more milk in them or something like that, they warm right up and you can just like set it and forget it until your guests are ready to eat.
And that's one of the great things about things like the Instapot and other multi-cookers is it's also a slow cooker as well. So you can ultimately, you know, do all of that in just one pot.
In just one pot.
Yeah.
What are some other cool new things?
So we have the Joule sous vide. So sous vide actually means under pressure. So it's a newer cooking method. It's definitely taken on kind of a life on its own. It used to be a thing that you only heard, you know, high-end restaurants, you know, preparing food sous vide. But we actually have, you know, the Joule specifically is the brand that we carry, where you can throw it in a bigger pot and make your own, you know, sous vide machine.
What does that mean?
So basically it's a water bath, and the actual sous vide attachment, it looks almost like an immersion blender, mm-hmm. if I could compare it to something.
Right.
And, you know, it's all smart now. It's Wi-Fi enabled, and you set your temperature on your Joule, and it warms the water, and it circulates it, right?
Okay.
So it maintains the temperature of your water, and then you can cook your, you know, whatever food it is. You put it in a vacuum-sealed bag, so it's airtight.
Oh, okay.
And then you place it in, you submerge it underwater, and it cooks. And the great thing about cooking something sous vide is you can't overcook it, because the Joule actually maintain the temperature of the water, so it won't overcook or undercook. It keeps it the same. So.
Wow. It kind of idiot-proofs the whole process.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Exactly.
And I would know about being an idiot in the kitchen, that's for sure. Let me take a break. We'll come right back. Amy Lukasik is here from the Sur La Table and Old Orchard. Got some recipes, some cooking classes, all getting you ready for Thanksgiving next on WGN. 12:49, check your clocks to make sure that you have fallen back properly. It's Dean Richards, our Food Time show on the air on WGN, talking Thanksgiving prep with Amy Lukasik, who is a resident chef with Sur La Table in Old Orchard. We're talking off the air during the break about maybe one of the most important tools that you can have in your kitchen for Thanksgiving, a proper meat thermometer. I've told the story on the air, and I'm not proud of this, but I undercooked my turkey last year, and much of my family got sick as a result of that. And I'm sure I will never hear the end of that. I thought that I had a good thermometer. I didn't. It was a cheapy thermometer, and first thing that I did, after buying a case of Kaopectate for my family, was going out and getting a decent thermometer. So important, right?
Yes, absolutely. So there's kind of two different kinds of thermometers that I would always suggest having on hand, because I've been right there with you, Dean. I have overcooked my turkey. Yeah. I have undercooked it.
It's tricky with the turkey, because
it
you
really
can put
is.
The probe in one place, But yes. It may not be done in another place.
Right. And, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, is making sure that your oven is actually to the proper temperature. And that's
the oven's fault.
Yes.
Finally, I have a good excuse for this.
So having an oven thermometer just in general will make your life a lot easier. So if you feel like, you know, the recipe says to put it in for 10 minutes, it's in for 10 minutes and it looks overdone, it might be that your oven just runs a little warm, you know. I've had ovens where it was 50 degrees over what it said, you know, on the dial. So, you know, $10, get yourself an oven thermometer, keep it in there. They're magnetic. And it's just kind of one of those fail-safe, you know, things to have.
So you get an accurate read of inside of the oven. But what about instant read is what
right,
you
exactly.
Want, right?
So, you know, gone are the days of the thermometers that, you know, just said meat and poultry and didn't even actually have a degree reading. Yeah. So if you have one of those, I would suggest putting that to rest and picking up a digital thermometer.
Right.
We've come such a long way with digital thermometers. And, you know, there's a whole bunch on the market. And, you know, they can be as, you know, inexpensive as $20 all the way up to $100, right?
Right.
So the ideal thing is making sure that you have a good quality digital thermometer, so it gives you an accurate reading on for your meat, and it doesn't even just have to be the turkey. You can use it for anything.
For anything.
And
I would suggest a pretty big digital readout, so you don't have to stick your head in the oven or move
exactly.
things around, so you easily see what the actual temperature is.
Right.
But you were telling me about, you know, new technology now.
Yes.
A way to check the temperature of the meat, the
right.
turkey, whatever,
yep.
without even opening the oven door.
Absolutely. So, you know, to your point, you know, kind of opening up the oven, having to stick it in there, trying to read it, especially if it's a small screen. Well, what you're doing is you're letting out all of your heat,
right,
right of your oven. So what we have are these digital thermometers where you can stick the probe in your turkey, and it's connected to a cord that you can actually close the oven on, and then it has a display screen that you can have on your countertop that shows the internal temperature of your turkey. So you can keep track of your turkey's internal temperature
without even opening the door. And I've seen these Bluetooth thermometers.
Oh, yes.
That you put the probe in into the meat, and then there's a readout. You put an app on your phone.
Exactly.
And there's a readout on your phone, and you don't even need the yeah. cord then. So.
And there's great thermometers that even have remote pagers. So if your turkey hits a certain temperature and you're not in the room, if you're doing a load of laundry or what have you, or if you're entertaining,
it
beeps and tells you to come back to the kitchen.
Fantastic. And that's why I could spend all day at Sur La Table.
Exactly, yes.
there's so many other things. But also you've got cooking classes that
yes.
are going on.
Yes.
What are some of the classes that you have going on?
So we have a lot of fun ones for Thanksgiving. Obviously, this is kind of our Super Bowl season, if you will, for chefs and for foodies. So we offer a couple of different classes, honestly, that will make your life easier trying to do Thanksgiving if you're entertaining or it's your first time maybe doing Thanksgiving. So we offer a class that is just our classic favorite Thanksgiving recipes. So I suggest that if you're maybe cooking for the in-laws for the first time, or if you haven't cooked a Thanksgiving dinner, these are basic recipes.
Yeah.
You know, they're not, you know, too crazy.
Right.
And we'll give you a lot of good techniques and how to time yourself on the special day. If you're a little bit more adventurous, maybe you want to have a little bit, you know, something different, you know, if you're kind of done doing kind of the same old thing
yeah.
every year.
Do you have one, like, really great recipe to knock us out with for Thanksgiving that'll make Thanksgiving amazing?
Yeah, I would actually say it's a side dish, actually, and we're showcasing it in our Bon Appetit sponsored Thanksgiving sides classes, and it's maple roasted carrots with harissa.
Oh, nice.
So it's kind of got this spicy sweet, and you can use rainbow carrots, and it is a beautiful presentation on the table, and it takes something as humble as a carrot and turns it into something completely different.
You know what I was on? I think it must have been your website that I was on. I was looking at different things that I don't think I need that apparently I do. But yeah. I saw a ceramic pie pan.
Yes.
Ceramic. Mm-hmm. But it's so you can make two different pies in the same pan.
Oh no! So
with a separator down the middle, so you could like do apple on one side and pumpkin on the other.
Yeah,
or something like maybe apple and blueberry, something that would cook at the same.
So definitely, if you have a lot of different taste buds, yeah.
That's
cook
a fantastic idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You could definitely be creative with it. Yeah.
What are some of your favorite dessert options?
I am a sucker for just the humble apple pie. My stepmom actually makes a great apple pie. She packs it full of apples. But I love, we do in one of our autumn pies and tarts classes, we do like a cranberry tart.
Nice.
And I absolutely love cranberries, and they're beautiful this time of year. So right. It's like, take advantage of it.
Right. And good old pumpkin pie. I mean, you can't.
Of course.
You cannot beat it for Thanksgiving. Dinner.
The star of the show.
All of these things and more are discussed in the many cooking classes at Sur La Table. All of the tools and toys and everything kitchenware.
Yeah.
Sur La Table, what's the best way to get information on all of these things?
So definitely go to Sur La Table's website, and if you are interested in our classes, just hit in-store classes and it will prompt you to the one that's closest to you.
Okay.
And you can take a look at our calendar.
Good deal. Thank you for coming in.
Absolutely.
Really
Thank
interesting.
You so much.
Looking forward to doing it again. Amy Lukasik, resident chef, Sur La Table, Old Orchard.